Welcome to the Hogan Lovells National Security Podcast, discussing and analyzing the legal implications of national security issues across the globe. Our hosts, Hogan Lovells attorneys Michael Scheimer and Tim Bergreen, have decades of hands-on experience in national security issues and how they relate to their clients' day-to-day goals. And now, here are Michael and Tim.
Good afternoon, Tim.
Mike, happy Friday. How are you?
I'm doing well. Happy Friday. Welcome back to our National Security Podcast.
And not surprisingly, like everybody else in Washington, D.C. this week, we're going to be talking about that Chinese spy balloon that has been obsessing people both inside the Beltway and elsewhere for about the last 2 weeks. I think you were telling me just before we went to record this that there's a bit of an update about a second balloon, possibly.
Yeah, so this is very timely to our listeners. As we're recording this on Friday, we have just heard that there is a White House briefing that the Pentagon detected and shot down some other object over Alaska as of Friday. Right now, while we're recording this, I don't think there's been any more details on the briefing at the White House as to what that is, though I think everyone in Washington is treating this as potentially another, you know, spy balloon. And I think we'll get a Pentagon specific briefing a little bit later, but it makes it all the more timely that we are having our own, you know, 99 red balloon episode today to hear that something else was just shot down on this very day.
So it's been quite a couple of weeks. You know, what's your take on this, Mike? You know, what's going on here? Is this, you know, are we going back to the future with the spy balloons or what?
Yeah. So I did want to talk about from the technology aspect, which is something we've done on the show and will continue to do, is sort of talk about innovative technologies and critical emerging technologies and national security. Use of a blimp or a balloon is not, it's actually innovative per se. I mean, they've been around for observation with telescopes from, you know, Napoleonic era, Civil War, definitely used in World War I, World War II. We were just talking before we recorded here about, I remember the J lens, which was a tethered sensor balloon that the U.S. Army had, I think, parked up in Maryland at Aberdeen Proving Ground, which was tethered, though, so, you know, tied to the ground, not just floating freely, which, when we get into this, but as I recall, like, eventually it got loose at one point in a crazy weather storm and dragged the tether throughout, I think, Maryland and Pennsylvania, like hitting power lines, things like that, and causing damage. So that's, you know, perhaps why I think they canceled that, the program after that. But the concept of using balloons for, you know, observation and sensors in warfare, or I guess I'd say, you know, in spying and surveillance and espionage, is not a new idea. But what was interesting about this one here were things like, again, not tethered, right? So sort of floating freely. And a couple of reactions I had just while people were talking about this or last week, and we can get into more of what actually happened, but there's certainly lower cost. We don't know what the Chinese contractor, what it costs them to make this particular balloon, but it's certainly lower cost than a satellite or other surveillance techniques. So you've got that benefit. Probably long life in the field. You know, these could be up for hundreds of days, depending on the battery life. I recall hearing one commentator talking about, you know, compared to the cost benefit analysis of a sensor balloon to us having aircraft circling or loitering over a certain area and they have to refuel with a C-130, like that's thousands and thousands of dollars of time and energy and fuel costs, whereas you could let a balloon just sort of go for hundreds of days. Low observability from a radar perspective because of their profile, they're not, and they're slow, which actually for detection purposes they're harder to detect. And I think some other advantages too, and this is getting away from the surveillance piece, but it put me in mind of some other new innovative uses of balloons and airships lately. Like Google had this program, I want to say it was called Pathfinder, to use blimps to communicate with each other and then provide a signal to, say, rural areas where there's not fiber optics or cell towers. You know, that could be rural America or that could be like Kenya. So it's kind of like Starlink, the satellite platform, but, you know, at the blimp level, right? So you get your internet through these blimps. Same idea here that it's, you know, maybe it's lower cost, but I think Google canceled the project because they just couldn't get the cost benefit analysis to work out. But that's now. I mean, maybe in 5 years or less, we'll see someone come up with that. So these are all sort of tech reactions to what this was. Oh, and I guess the other point I want to note is, since we had first all had heard in the media about the balloon, it's now been shot down by an F-22 off the coast of South Carolina. And I believe from recovering the wreckage, and we could talk more about that, Tim, we've heard that there were antenna and other sensor packages on it that indicate it wasn't just for collecting imagery, you know, actually getting, you know, snapshots of the land the way we use satellites or UAVs for, but could also have been used for intercepting communications. So that's interesting, because one aspect of this whole scenario that I found interesting when the public, you know, folks would comment on this were, well, if the Chinese already can see we're doing it through satellites or other means, why would they possibly need a balloon? For all the reasons I just mentioned, right? Like low observability, potentially harder to shoot down or detect or shoot down, probably lower cost. And then that last part, well, maybe it's taking images, but maybe it's also able to intercept communications, right? So it's got this whole package going on. So that was sort of my tech take on it for the moment.
So I want to chat a little bit, you know, my perspective, I think more on sort of what it means as an intelligence collection platform. And then maybe we could talk a little bit about the reaction here, the reaction in Beijing, what the prospects are for the bilateral relationship going forward. You know, there's sort of two, if you're thinking about kind of overhead architecture, and that means satellites in space, and, you know, most of those are flying either in low Earth orbit or geosynchronous orbit. And low Earth orbit satellites, you know, are closer to Earth and they move more quickly around the Earth. Geosynchronous orbits, you know, are, I forgot like how many thousands of miles out, but they're basically sort of, they sit over a fixed point. And so they sort of maintain contact with a fixed point on the ground. And most of our imaging satellites and a lot of our electronic intelligence satellites and signals intelligence satellites operate in that low Earth orbit area. And what our adversaries are able to do is they know when these satellites are coming over, they know for how long they will be there, and in many cases, they actually know what type of satellite they are based on their own observations of them, and they're able to sort of shut down and adjust their activity level in order to make as little visible to us as possible. And so there is a great premium placed on sort of what are called unworn assets. And those are assets that show up over a particular location without an adversary knowing that they're there or expecting them. And whether that's a balloon, whether that's a space-based asset, whether that's some other sort of platform, you know, something like a drone or something that an adversary is not expecting. And so that's the one part. And then the second that you've hit on is this whole notion of persistence. If you know that, you know, twice a day for 7.5 minutes, you're going to have to shut everything down, you know, you can sort of adjust the schedule of your activities at a particular location in order to do that. On the other hand, if you have a balloon that is sitting over a missile field for 18, 24, 36 hours before it sort of moves on, that poses a much greater challenge in terms of concealing things that you want to conceal or sort of maintaining the readiness that you need to maintain. So that's why, you know, that would sort of be the benefit for this type of thing. You know, it can possibly pick up some types of signals intelligence that you wouldn't necessarily get from all the way out in space. In some cases, you could get, you know, more exquisite photographs, but I doubt that the proximity to Earth would make up for the sort of smaller camera size that you'd be getting. And look, this is me sitting here in my law firm office on a Friday afternoon saying this. My hunch is that the benefit that the Chinese get from this is somewhat marginal, that there is probably some benefit, but that this is not an earth-shattering event. It probably has not merited the sort of 14-day freakout that we've had now. It's something that we're going to have to contend with. just to remind our listeners, a lot of the intelligence the Chinese get from this platform or additional intelligence, we get from flying planes and from other listening stations surrounding China. Our big advantage remains, you know, the one that the Chinese don't have, and that is our worldwide network of alliances and partnerships. I would rather be collecting our way than having to fly balloons. So I'll leave it at that.
Those are great points. And I wanted to pick up on something about, well, kind of just as you said it there, that the U.S. potentially doesn't have to do this. We have other ways of collecting information because of our worldwide network of allies. We've also heard in the last week or two here, right, that there may have been other balloons like this that have flown over, you know, the continental United States, that maybe that wasn't publicly acknowledged. One thing that's interesting about this scenario that you and I talked about earlier is I understood that the first sort of in our, you know, highly tech-centric world we have today, the first sort of public knowledge of this were American citizens in Montana who saw something up in the sky and they took photos and like got out on Twitter. And so, you know, the public was aware of this before the U.S. government kind of got in front of it. We don't have enough sort of public information to know if that would be different, you know, for the other balloons that came before. For example, what I mean, it sounds like we had other balloons that had come over before. Were they different in size? You know, is there a reason maybe no one saw them? But here, the public caught them first. And then, so we had a lot of attention on this right as we were getting up to Secretary of State Blinken's visit to China. And as I think our listeners know, that was canceled. So I want to pick up on that and ask some questions, you know, to you, Tim, on that is if the American public had not seen this and it sort of got out there, do you think this really would have had any impact on canceling Blinken's visit? I mean, assuming the Pentagon had detected it just like the last few times, it sounds like they knew about it. Would they have cared and made us think about it and still canceled the visit or not? And I guess another question on that, too, is knowing that this visit was happening, why did this happen now? Like, were there parts of the Chinese government not talking to each other? Because I understand, I defer to you on the, you know, the China expertise here is it's a lot of effort to get these visits organized. This is a follow-up, I think, from President Biden meeting Xi Jinping in Bali. It's a lot of work to get these things set up. Why on earth would the Chinese float a balloon over here like a week before the Secretary of State's trip?
So let's go ahead and let's take the second one of those questions first. My guess is, and I think there have been press accounts that have essentially sort of traced back the origins of the current Chinese, you know, balloon intelligence effort, if you will, back a few years. It goes back to sort of the mid-2010s or whatever, when the Chinese reorganized their military, went through the beginnings of a military modernization campaign that is ongoing. My guess is that they at some point designed a program of global balloon intelligence, if you will, because apparently these things have been, you know, now sort of accounted for over approximately 40 different countries at some point. There was probably a discussion at the very highest levels of the Central Military Commission and, you know, other very senior elements of the Chinese leadership, and that there was probably a decision taken to go ahead. Once that happened, and once these things started going, my guess is that there may have been sort of notification to whatever kind of the Chinese equivalent of the NSC staff is when these were happening, but that there would not have been the kind of thing where I don't think a decision memo would show up on Xi Jinping's desk that says, we're launching another balloon at the United States for intelligence gathering purposes, yay or nay. You know, I don't think that this was that important a program to them. I think that if it is true that they had been floating these balloons for several years over several dozen countries, that they expected the reaction that they got. And my guess now, getting to the first question, if nobody had seen it publicly, but even if the U.S. government was aware of it, that the Blinken visit would have gone on. I mean, countries spy on each other. It's part of the business. It can be disconcerting, I think. And, you know, we need to take efforts to, you know, keep our secrets secret. But at the same time, you know, if every time somebody's sort of trying to peek through the shutters, you're going to sort of shut down diplomatic engagement for weeks or months at a time, that's going to cause a real rupture in statecraft, not only between the US and China, but among a lot of countries.
Yeah. So on the diplomatic relations at the moment, I'd like to also kind of get your thoughts on what other lasting impacts is this going to have sort of in the near term, the fact that the visit has not gone ahead and the fact that the US shot this down. By that, I mean, again, we've had a lot of other developments in this space, and that's a whole other podcast right there. But, you know, an announcement about the US having bases, additional bases in the Philippines. We have the relationship with Australia, with the submarines that, you know, just announced, all topics of which I expect were going to be in some way addressed in Secretary of State Blinken's visit. But now this meeting is canceled. So I'd like to get your thoughts on sort of what are these other areas where China was, I expect, hoping to talk to us about some of these areas, but now there's no meeting going ahead. And here the US is still, you know, we haven't backed off of any of our plans in the United States. In the meantime, we're not having a meeting with the Chinese to allay any of their concerns either. What does this mean, say, you know, in the next month?
Right. So this, you know, just to get the listeners kind of up to speed here, this Blinken visit to China grew out of the November Bali meeting between President Biden and President Xi. And the idea was to build a floor, so to speak, in the relationship and to erect guardrails. That's sort of the U.S. hope. The idea being that in a crisis or a misunderstanding that things could rapidly spin out of control. One of the things that has concerned senior U.S. officials and others is that since the Pelosi visit to Taiwan last August, there's been no mil-mil contact, military-to-military dialogue, pretty much whatsoever between the U.S. and China. And in fact, after the balloon shoot down, Secretary of Defense Austin tried to reach out to his Chinese counterpart, and the Chinese didn't answer the phone. I believe and hope that there are going to be efforts in the coming weeks to get this visit back on track. There are a lot of things that the U.S. and China need to talk about. There's the ongoing campaign of export controls by the United States against China, which, you know, had its sort of first cut last October. There's the likely outbound investment executive order coming out within the next 2 months, is the latest timeline from the New York Times yesterday. There's also the China Select Committee, a possible visit to Taiwan at some point this year by Speaker McCarthy. And these are things that we need to speak to the Chinese about to make sure that whatever the reaction is, that it's something that, you know, both sides can manage and that can lead to dialogue and some sort of diplomatic process, no matter how difficult the bilateral relationship is. If that meeting does not take place, you know, the reaction to all of these things from the Chinese side becomes much more unpredictable. And so I think, you know, from a very practical standpoint, that getting that meeting back on the schedule as soon as possible, you know, as soon as practicable, I guess, is good for us.
Yeah. So it's interesting the way you described it, that it sounds like to me that if frankly, this balloon situation had not happened for another week or two, one of the goals of Secretary Blinken's visit was, as you said, to establish guardrails and sort of have the, how do we communicate with each other in the event of some sort of incident like this one. But unfortunately, because of the timing, this happened first. We have not established those guardrails or ways to sort of pick up the phone and call. And now the, you know, the sides are just kind of back to starting all over again. So I think it's unfortunate for both sides here, both countries, that this happened to happen just before the visit and maybe not after.
And one of the things that's really concerning here, of course, is that China has been very upset for years about these U.S. reconnaissance flights near their borders. You may recall back in the spring of 2001, there was an EP-3 reconnaissance plane that collided with a Chinese fighter and then made an emergency landing on Hainan Island, which sparked a multi-week diplomatic situation at that point. Even recently, Chinese pilots have been intercepting other reconnaissance flights in what the U.S. and Australian navies have sort of termed an unprofessional and unsafe manner. In the wake of the balloon incident, the foreign ministry and other spokespeople for the Chinese government have indicated that they're going to take more aggressive action against intruder aircraft in Chinese airspace in the future. And so just that alone, I think, argues for a restoration of the military-to-military dialogue at an absolute minimum as soon as possible. But again, you know, argues for some way forward, you know, to get this meeting back on track. We'll, you know, see whether the Congress, frankly, allows some breathing space for some diplomacy by the executive branch here. You know, the whole sort of political dynamic domestically, I think, is something that could occupy us for several podcasts on another Friday.
Yeah, and I think on that note, I think we're probably getting close to time here. Is any other final remarks, Tim? I think you kind of actually just summed it up.
You know, it's going to be very interesting to see how this latest incident plays out and whether or not it indeed was another balloon, and whether or not, also I'm looking to see whether the U.S. government releases any photographs that were taken supposedly by U-2 spy planes around the balloon while it was in flight over the United States. So those are a couple things I'm looking for, but other than that, I'm looking forward to a weekend.
Well, I think then, you know, our next podcast, we'll be exploring some other topics, but we will probably have to spend at least a minute or two just telling the listeners what's the update from what Tim and I have heard as of right now in this recording about whatever that object was that was shut down over Alaska. So we'll at least hit on that for a minute to figure out what that is. As of right now, there's still no other information like from the Pentagon or the White House confirming it was a balloon or not. I think the only thing we've heard is there was confirmation it was unmanned, and so they shot it down. So we'll probably spend, you know, at least a minute on that next time. So thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.
Mike, thanks so much. Have a great weekend.
Have a great weekend, Sam.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Hogan Lovells National Security Podcast. To learn more about top 10 global law firm Hogan Lovells with more than 50 offices worldwide, please visit HoganLovells.com.